officers, a department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often has a beat. Just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome, folks. This is Captain Fred. This is the Fifth Dimension. Today, I have my special guest, Captain Chris, on. Chris, are you on the line now, or did I lose you just a minute ago?
You know, I don't know, Fred. You may have lost me here.
You've got it. You've got it right now. Chris, you know, I do two shows. I do a show on Republic Broadcasting. I have a producer that takes calls and sets things up and plays music. And on Revolution Radio, all the hosts produce their own shows. So if we screw up, then it's totally my fault. I can't blame anybody at all. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, but I just wanted to tell your listeners that so if we perceive a fall off in quality, we know who to pin it on, right? I'm really thankful to be here, and I know that we've, as a preliminary matter, discussed today's topic, which has to do with, if I recall correctly, the processing of information. That is to say, how do we get information, and, you know, what do we do with this? What are our obligations, and what are we up against with the emotionally or developmentally arrested progressives who we try to discourse with what we research to be fact or science or math, and what are we likely to hear from them and why? And that's kind of like what, and it all starts with the media, but just to set the table here. How are we doing?
Well, Chris, you know, we had spoken about this topic a couple days ago, and I started working on it, and I found a Bible quote, Romans 12:2. It says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." And that's exactly what we're talking about. We need to be transformed by the renewal of our minds now. And we can do this by classical examination of information. And you had brought up the topic of the distractions. And like, there's a lot of distractions going on in the background where you are right now. I'm not really sure, but.
Absolutely think that there's not only distraction. I think that there is an intent to distract. And they're two different things. Like I'm sitting in a lounge and someone delivered some boxes and that's what you heard. That was a distraction. But the guy delivering the boxes didn't mean to distract me. He didn't even know I was, on radio broadcasting. But on the other hand, I want you to stop and think for a minute. When you go to the mainstream media, who are you dealing with? I mean, if you go to major networks, you have people like George Stephanopoulos, who was the press secretary for the Clintons. I mean, do I have to get more involved than just saying that? You know, you have people like Zucker at CNN, and, Jeffrey Toobin. You know, I didn't want to get into the distasteful stuff that the guy was doing live, But Zucker, in terms of distraction, it's not only distraction in the sense that they mean to keep you from focusing on the truth. They mean to keep the truth away from you. In fact, they keep away facts that would allow you to review, to come to an educated opinion. Let me give you an example of what happened this week with this guy, Zucker. Zucker tells... not to me, but an otherwise believing world, that why CNN didn't follow the Hunter Biden laptop story was because, and here's his reasoning, because Hunter Biden hasn't been arrested. Let me do that again. If a person hasn't been arrested, well, they're not going to cover the story. Well, just for a second, if I would have believed that, that would certainly explain why they didn't cover Epstein, the pedo Air Force down to, to whatever that island was. I get it, because Epstein and Clinton and of course, they downplayed, Hillary's circumstances because she wasn't arrested. I get this. Maybe. But that certainly didn't slow them down with Trump. And by the way, you and I have discussed, I really don't have a whole lot of great thing to say about his personality. I think he gets in his own way. But I would have to say that on balance, I prefer the policy, but I digress. The point is, from these progressives who speak through the media, you not only are not going to hear things, but the things that you hear are going to be tilted in a way that obscure and distract from what's really going on. Putin is responsible for the increase in fuel prices. I mean, nonsense like this you hear on these from the mainstream media. So who cares?
Well, the mainstream media is the government propaganda. It is the government arm of propaganda. And most people that listen to this show and to other shows on Revolution Radio know this. I mean, the quote that I read from the Bible says, do not be conformed to this world. And if we discuss, if we get involved in the discussion of that narrative, then we're conforming our mental exercise to what we know about that world. That's the confusing part of it, is that we can throw out all the narrative details to each other, but that's just exactly what it is. It's details of a narrative that is of this world, and if we conform to it by discussing it, don't we?
Well, actually, yes and no. I brought this up with the media spin because I think that this sets the table for what do we do, similar to what you acquire from the Bible. What do we do in response and why? We are not in a police state yet, in my opinion. We are involved in the democratic republic and its processes. And we as citizens have an obligation to appear in the agora, in the marketplace. And we are obligated to appear in the political discussion, because if we can't get information from one source, it falls on us to identify what's accurate and communicate that. This discourse, I don't think, is necessarily a fault or stupid. I think it's a civic obligation, and that's why I'm setting this up. If we can decide that, and as you said, most all of the listeners would agree that the spin that we get gives us about 80% to say, like, whatever they're saying, I really don't have time for that. But if I do research, if I do my own truth finding, and I try to present it, where does that put us? And today's focus was going to be on the arrested emotional development of progressives. And what happens routinely when you try to have a meaningful conversation with someone who has a progressive worldview? That's where I was kind of headed with this. I wasn't trying to belabor the obvious that the mainstream media is.
Yeah, well, that's just it, is that I've gone through the CIA's Gitmo torture situation, and the torture situation that they put detainees in Gitmo puts people in a situation where they consume a narrative that's produced to ensnare argument by the people that are detained. I mean, if you want to turn people against each other, then get them involved in a narrative that they can choose sides on. And that's exactly what they've done. They created a situation in this world where people are choosing sides and are not really addressing the real pertinent issues. Like, do these elections really mean anything? You know, if they are controlling information to the point where we really don't know what's going on, then these elections are meaningless, Chris. We don't have any way of knowing who is controlling election. And it's like I read some issue or some a book from Phyllis Schlafly 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was interesting. She said back then in the 50s and 60s that the candidates for both parties were selected and not elected.
Well, you know, and I can for the better part of that agree. On the other hand, I would say this. You know, at one point in the history, I think it was Utah's death penalty, they used to give the choice, the selection of the manner of the imposition of the death penalty to the condemned. You know, and it was sort of like, would you rather be shot or hung? You know, and you got to choose. You know, and I'm not going to say that elections are really at that point yet. But I would say that there really is some difference. I wouldn't say when you're looking at Mitch McConnell or, you know, Nancy Pelosi, is there a lot of difference? What are the similarities? Yeah. But if I look at someone like Carrie Lake, or if I look at Tulsi Gabbard, I have to say, you know something, particularly in the case of Tulsi Gabbard, you know, I see someone who's really speaking the things in which I believe. And it means enough to her that she abandons associations with the people that she realizes aren't consistent with those ideals. So I think that there is some difference. I don't think it's at the level I'm going to get shot or hung. I do agree that the candidates in large part are pre-selected. But the point is, I think there really is some difference. And I think it's important for us to understand what the background is and what the policy issues are. In other words, I agree that if I'm looking at Mitch McConnell or if I'm looking at, you know, Liz Cheney, and I'm trying to compare them with, you know, Kristen Sinema, it's a close call. But I do think that there's a difference, and I think that there's an obligation that we study what the best situation is politically for us. And we communicate the information that supports our opinion, because we're not going to get it public in this publicly. And this means that other people aren't. So it's on us to share that. That's how I come down on this. I agree with you. It's fairly similar in choices, but I don't think that it's the reductionist argument that everybody does it or everything's the same. I don't agree with that. There may be a lot of similarities, but I don't think that.
Chris, the problem that we have is that we don't have any shared experience or actually a real experience with these topics that we discuss. We have the shared experience of having seen it on the media. We don't really have a firsthand experience account with any of this stuff other than what we're told. So how can we actually have a realistic discussion of what the reality of it is with these candidates if the only thing we know is what we've been told by the media?
Well, Fred, let me start. There's a position that you're espousing that's kind of intriguing. And let me ask you this. Do you know that you really do have a liver? How do you know? Okay. The second thing is,
I'm told by people I trust I cannot ask my liver directly because my liver is angry at me right now anyway. So,
Let me ask you a different question. How do you really know your name is Fred?
That's actually my assumed name. My real name is Raul. But that's another story.
And how do you know that's your real name? You know, the thing is that in all of it, someone has told you this stuff. And at a certain point, what you have to do is dig deep enough to satisfy yourself that the level at which you're acquiring the information is sufficiently accurate.
Chris, that's really, really a profound thing right there that we've came across. How do we really... We've assumed the persona of who we think we are, and we've assumed a lot of things. And, you know, a lot of it is, and this is a topic that you brought up, we've assumed it by how we feel about things and, you know, the feelings of how we approach our lives are probably have been put in position from years and years of training, right?
Well, I would say so. I think that we are where we are because of our experience, and I completely agree with you. But what I mean to say is this, is that although I think it is correct to question, and we should question down to the level where we're satisfied, that's not what we get from the progressives on the other side. And let me give you an example. One ought not to be surprised. Progressives are not deterred by fact that is not reasonably subject to challenge. Now, a Supreme Court candidate can't define what a woman is. Let's think about this for a minute. This Supreme Court justice is going to determine whether laws are fairly applicable to women, whoever they are. But it gets worse. If you run facts that cannot reasonably be challenged up against the progressive, ultimately, what they'll do is just simply deny the fact. For example, I think, and I do this because I can do this with, like, you know, objects like two coins and then two more coins. I'm reasonably certain that 2 + 2 = 4. But progressives get to the point where they straight-facedly deny that. So the thing is I agree with you that at a certain level, we arrive where we arrive in terms of our intellectual positioning based on our experience. But then on the other hand, there is a certain amount of introspection and study and reflection that produces a higher order of accuracy. In other words, I'm here to tell you there are two genders. Sorry. Now, if you ask me, are there other positions that people's opinion may lead them to? Well, yeah, I would have to say that people could think that they are a third gender, or they could think that they're a tomato or whatever, but it doesn't make them a tomato and it doesn't make them a different gender. And the difference is I'm terribly sorry. There's something going on in the background here. How thoroughly do we examine what the information is, and how thoroughly do we analyze that information to come to an opinion? And so if someone says that 2 and 2 isn't 4, well, that's okay, and they can think that, and they can say that, but it doesn't make their response accurate. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, Fred.
Yeah, I understand.
We need to dig deep, and when we posit a position, it ought to be the result of thorough examination of the facts. So there you have it. Well, and I don't think that the progressives are up to that.
Well, yeah, but the media is manipulating behavior in a lot of different ways. I mean, they have given us a certain amount of information about what is our position and how we're involved in a war in a country that's closest to Russia, you know, first of all, no one is asking the questions that are really pertinent to our individual lives, is like, how is this affecting us, and what, who benefits from this invasion? And these questions aren't being asked by the media. All they're talking about are the details of something we have no way of knowing about. And we are basing our behavior and our position and how we feel about this, how we feel is that word again, too, by what we're being told. But, you know, classically, looking back historically in the last 50 or 60 years, all of these things that we've been pushed into have been basically for the benefit of the people that make money selling guns, make money loaning money to people that want to make guns. It seems like we've been involved in this war cycle now continuously for all of my life. And the propaganda machine manipulates behavior by manipulating how we feel. And that's part of the topic that you brought up the other day, Chris.
Well, what I'm suggesting is progressives feel. That's their deal. They feel. I'm triggered by your asking me whether I have a girlfriend. I'm triggered by that. You know, well, who gives a snot how you feel? You know, the thing is that, and I'm going to go down that road in just a second about feelings and arrested emotional development. But the point is, we ought to strike that from our meaningful discourse. I feel that. Who cares how you feel? You know, Rocco from the Boondock Saints once said, you know why real men don't express their feelings? Rocco says, because it's none of your business. You know,
that's not exactly what he said, was it?
Yeah, it is exactly what he said. You know, the point in all of this is that leading with how you feel is an emotionally arrested position. Who cares how you feel if we're having a discourse about matters that affect our everyday life? And when I say how you feel, I'm not suggesting that an opinion is the same as feeling. They're different. An opinion ought to be based on the best available facts and the best available logical progress to reach an opinion. Feeling is an entirely different thing. And feeling is the central value of the development of children. Let me go through this. You know, when you're a little itty-bitty kid, It's all about how you feel. When you're an infant, there are only two or three things you're up to. You poop, you eat, you sleep, and you get annoyed. And that's about it. And it's all about you, and it's all about how you feel. In other words, I feel like my diaper's wet, or I feel like I'm hungry, or I feel that I really don't like that bright light, or I feel that I'm tired. And that centralized emotional state drives that infant's behavior. And we as parents and we as a society are hoping that people, as they go through life, as they age, as they mature, expand the area of concern. In other words, it starts off with a couple, two, three concepts, and then you go through terrible twos, which is all about the, you know, the child. And you go through a development where, you know, teenagers resist, traditional values and seek out to score their own values and horizons. It's all about how they feel and what they're thinking. And if you've ever tried to reason with a teenager, apart from generally wasting your time, you wind up with that value. And the question is...
Hey, Chris,
is,
we're going to have to take a break here in a minute.
Sure.
Hold this thought here. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Captain Fred. And we have Captain Chris online, too. You're listening to The Fifth Dimension on Revolution Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8. on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Yeah, welcome back. This is the Fifth Dimension, and your host, Captain Fred, and your guest today is Captain Chris. Chris, you've brought up something that I think everybody suffers from a little bit, is the term arrested development. Don't we all suffer from arrested development when we become involved in the discussion of something we really have no way of verifying?
Well, yes, I would say that everybody at some point has had arrested emotional development. I say that laughingly, but most people try to either try or eventually outgrow it. You know, the thing is there's information that we're given, Fred, and I agree with you that it's managed, but there's certain information that we can deduce just by our life experience. And then what happens is when we get into a discourse about things that we observe, we get emotionally arrested responses. And let me set this up by saying, you know, if you have a two-year-old and you try to explain to the two-year-old rationally why it isn't a good idea to only eat, Captain Crunch breakfast cereal. You got to eat something else. That child is not going to be able to discourse rationally with you. And they really don't care what you're saying. The development of that child at like two or three gets them to the point that they what they want and they feel what they feel. And that's the end of the road. And it doesn't matter what information you're bringing to the conversation. They don't want it. They don't need it. And they're not listening to it. And what I was suggesting is when you are in a discourse, because we can't get news from the media, with other people to try to explain to them why you perceive a certain course of political action is not all the same. There are differences, and why you think one is better than the other, you absolutely can go to facts that aren't totally subjective. Let me give an example here. Hey, Fred, have you noticed that things cost more? And someone could say, well, that's not true. And then you could sit down and go to a grocery store and ask the grocer, you know, how much is a dozen eggs this year versus last year? Or you could show a picture of like what's going on when you're pumping gasoline into your car. It turns out things do cost more. So the question is when you're involved with people, progressives, who are effectively emotionally developmentally arrested, the responses that they get to why you can give the causes to that, what you identify as causes, what is going to be their response? And this is what we set this up for us. For the discourse, when you hear stuff, you know these people are emotionally, developmentally arrested, because here's what's going to happen. Let's say you say things cost more. And certainly they cost more than they used to. And why is that? And you say, well, you know, I think it has to do with energy costs, which I believe to be a direct result of energy policy. That's a choice. That's a government choice. And that's made fuel prices rise, I would say, that it's also because there is a spending policy. And what that results in is more dollars are in competition for the same item. And because more dollars are competing, the price goes up. And I give the following example. If I was starving to death and there was one ham sandwich left on the planet and I had $5, I'd give the $5 for the ham sandwich. That's all the money I have. But if I had $10, I'd give $10 in competition with somebody else's $10. So it turns out that those prices rise as more dollars are in circulation. This would be my analysis. The two things that costs are increasing, and this is why they're both not necessarily only, but they do have a direct implication from government policy. Okay.
Well, now, hey, listen. Well, now, wait a second.
Go ahead.
It's not necessarily fact-based. The only fact that we can bring to that narrative is the fact that the price is going up. Anything okay. that they've told us why it's gone up, we can't verify. We can only take their word for it. They have created a situation, they being the media, being the people that give the information to the media to disseminate to the people, can tell us that the reason why the price of gas is so damn high is because, well, let's see, the refineries have run into a shortage of good people that can operate the equipment. If that in conjunction with the high price would be what a lot of people phrase or term as a half truth. They've used the truth of the price going up to convince us of the lie, which is the reason why the price of gas has went up. You see what I mean?
I absolutely do. And this goes back to what I'm saying. It is our obligation to research that, to get back to the 2 + 2 actually does equal 4, and not to be giving over a feeling about stuff, and not giving over to an idea that we can't trust the fact that your name is really Fred. You know, the thing is, at some point, we have to trust some basics. I do have a liver. My name really is Chris. And we have to roll with that, or else we're simply paralyzed. We ought to be Buddhist monks if we
can't get it. Wait a second, Chris. We don't have to assume the reason why the price of gas has went up is because the administration has shut down the oil pipelines. That would be a good explanation. The fact that they're selling off all of our oil reserves, the fact that they've shut down drilling in so many places. We could relate it to that. It makes sense that that happens. But, man, I drove through West Texas a month or so ago, and I've never seen so much activity in the oil fields ever. I mean, the wildcatters are out there drilling wells and sticking, punching holes into the earth, and most of the pump jacks I saw out there were pumping oil. It's not because we're short on oil. All right, we've got plenty of oil.
I completely agree with you. I agree that we have the reserves. But here's what I would take. I would take, as much as I think the guy's a clown, I would take the president's, and I mean that on a personal level, not on the level of the office. I respect the level of the office, but this guy's beyond the pale. it was his pronounced position during the run-up to the election that he was going to stop drilling. He said that. And then after he took office, he shut down the pipeline, and he said, you know, yeah, I agreed to stop drilling. That's what I'm doing. So if I think that the shortage of oil or production or capacity is at fault for rising energy costs, I would have to say that basic economics would tell me that the less of you have of something, the higher the price goes. And actually, if you listen to the people in the government, and I've listened to them directly, they want the price to go up. They are doing this on purpose because they believe, and they, let me do this, they feel that the climate change is so significant that what we as a civilization ought to do is stop using petroleum energy. They tell you that. So the thing is, if they're telling me that, they're doing it on purpose, and I watch the increase in price, I have a reasonable basis to think that energy costs are pretty likely, maybe not the only reason, but they are related to the energy policy of the administration. So the thing is, how ultimately do I know a fact that what my real name is, or do I really have a liver? I guess at some point I have to say, no, I'm taking somebody's word for it. But on the other hand, if we don't make some assumptions, then we ought to really be in a cave contemplating our navel, because we can't really rely on anything. You know, we have to.
Well, now wait a second. Let's use a different circumstance on this. Let's say that some people that want to make a lot of money have control of the media, and they use their control of the media to perpetrate a belief or a feeling that there is a pandemic in this world, and that everybody should take a vaccine, which I provide, to save themselves from death or near death. I mean, we've just come out of 2 years of information, and now it's being proven that was pretty much a hoax. I mean, all the information is pointing to the weaponization of a viral situation. It could be the flu, whatever you want to call it, but it was like hurricanes, Chris. It was weaponized to control behavior, and that behavior,
absolutely.
That behavior took a few people to such unimaginable wealth. It drove a lot of people, the middle class mostly, into bankruptcy here in this country, and then that drove a lot of people into mega wealth by absorbing their properties. And what's really funny is that our government printed $7 trillion and gave it to the banks to loan to people that were put out of business by this propaganda. And yet, no one is trying to hang any of these people that perpetrated this. Now,
well,
tell me about...
I agree with you, and I think it's more, critical because of what you got as a response if you attempted to even talk about that stuff publicly is consistent with the type of responses that you get generally in political discourse. I think that I've mentioned, and I don't know if it was on this or another podcast, my daughter, who was pre-med, posted a study that was listed on the CDC website. I mean, I want you to understand this. My daughter posted on Facebook something that was available at the CDC's website. And what it had to do with were studies on the efficacy of course of treatment options. In other words, if you find out that you've got COVID, you might take this drug or that drug, and I mean, the drugs are hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, remesimab, other things. My daughter posted that information, and she was sanctioned by Facebook. In other words, you've got as we talk about it, where the people like Stephanopoulos and Zuckerberg and Tubin and people won't even discuss Hunter Biden's laptop, this is a different idea where they won't even let you discuss it. They won't let you discuss what the government is publishing. But just stop and think about that for a second. Why is that? You know, and so when you talk about, you know, controlled dialogue or controlled information, I completely agree with you. My question is what do you do in response? That's my positioning. And when you have a position, or you have an opinion, and you put it out there, so you did put it out there. For example, let's say I'm going to talk to someone about the efficacy of those blue cotton masks. I was in California 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there are people running around walking down Main Street or whatever the street was, and, you know, there's a wind, it's a sunny day, and there isn't anybody within like 300 yards, they're walking around with a mask on. And I'm thinking to myself, what's up with that? Maybe they like masks, you know, maybe. But actually, what I'm thinking is people are making a statement. This is a political statement. It's how they feel. It's not what the opinion that they reason through. It's how they feel. They feel that they're making a statement that's a good statement. That's a feeling. But if you attempt to discuss with them the fact that a study in Denmark revealed that the blue cotton mask is maybe 1% better than no mask at all. And then it becomes a policy decision. If you're trying to have a conversation with a progressive, that it's a policy decision. Does it make sense to shut down middle-class economy in support of doing things like wearing these stupid blue masks that really don't have an effect, but the policy really does? The policy is keeping people out of mom-and-pop restaurants, keeping them out of churches and stuff like that. Is that worth the candle? Is that a rational policy discussion? And what I'm trying to suggest is there is an almost predictable level of and type of response that you're going to get in return. And it's a good thing because you're talking about the pandemic. The first thing that you ought to look for is a distraction. In other words, you say, well, you know, I don't know why we're wearing these blue masks. I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And then someone will respond with a distraction, what I call the there's Elvis response. You'll say, I think these blue masks are ridiculous. And someone will say, well, you know something, it was the Trump administration who first, well, okay. But that doesn't mean today, 2 years later, it makes any sense to jail people for not wearing a mask. Well, yeah, but the Trump, that's a distraction. It doesn't have anything to do with the central value of whether a mask is effective. It's a distraction.
Yeah, and they use fear, too.
Well, there are other techniques. Someone can say, well, what everybody knows these masks work. This is the unsupported experts argument.
It's an argument to ignorance.
Yeah, it just says, well, everybody knows this. Well, as a matter of fact, everybody doesn't know it. And let me give you the underlying information that supports my opinion rather than the bald statement everybody knows. Let's talk about the information rather than the conclusion that everybody knows. For example, 50 former intelligence officials have said that this Hunter Biden story has all the earmarks of Russian disinformation. The response is, well, why do they say that? What about this laptop has anything to do with the Russians?
That's a lie of omission. They omitted the truth that would have influenced the elections. It was a lie of omission. They lied to us by omitting that.
But the positioning of the progressive argument is everybody knows. The intelligence officials say they know, but because what it does is it steps away from the underlying facts. The underlying facts are, wait a minute, are you trying to tell me that some Russian sleeper agent went in and put a computer in a repair shop with the idea with like fake emails in it? I mean, is that what you mean? Is that what we're doing?
Well, that's gaslighting. That's called gaslighting.
Is what? Where someone says, this is the fact, and if you don't believe that, you're crazy.
Right, yeah, that's gaslighting.
Okay, we'll go with gaslighting. So the thing is, these are the type of responses. If you put out a response and you get a there's Elvis, a distraction, the response has nothing to do with what you're saying. If you get a response that everybody knows, so a person doesn't have to defend the facts, if you present the facts and someone says, I don't know about that. I don't have the time to look into this. I'm a busy person. What they're doing is they're presenting their own ignorance as an excuse not to have to deal with their flawed opinion. And if the appropriate response would be, well, give me those information sites and those what you learned, and let me go research that. Let's follow up on this. That's a reasoned, disciplined, intellectual, cohesive response. But when somebody says, I don't have time to get, I just don't care, you know. What they're saying is my ignorance is an excuse not to have to answer your argument. And it should be pointed out, the fact that you're ignorant has nothing to do with this, other than the fact that I appreciate you acknowledging this. But, you know, it turns out that has nothing to do with the argument. It has nothing to do with the facts. It has nothing to do with my opinion. It may have to do with how you feel, but it has nothing to do with the with a cohesive opinion. You know, and when you get down to things, particularly in politics, there are other places where these people wind up, where they say, well, everybody does that. You know, what this means is I'm not going to critique whether or not, let's say, Nancy Pelosi's resistance to insider trading by members of Congress because, well, everybody does that. Well, the fact that everybody does it, first off, not everybody's in Congress. I'm not in Congress. But if I do insider trading, ask Martha Stewart, you may wind up in prison. So the thing is that the fact that everybody does it first is inaccurate. But secondly, the point in all of that is, if everybody does that, shouldn't we call to task those people who do? It's no excuse not to. In other words, if everybody's in Congress is a thief, then we ought to identify the thieves and make consequences address the behavior. And a response that everybody does that just sidesteps the argument completely. And what I'm suggesting is the emotionally arrested development from progressives have responses that, like a little kid resisting not being able to eat Captain Crunch three meals a day, aren't factually based. The arguments that you get from your three-year-old or from your teenager is likely to be devoid of factual and logical cohesion as you get from progressives. Look, there's Elvis. That's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. Everybody does that. This reduction to absurdity, this reductionist argument has nothing to do with the facts. I don't have time has nothing to do with the facts. Everybody knows. No, everybody doesn't know. Or the standby, and this is a real progressive position, is the ad hominem attack on the speaker. So you say something like, I think that inner city schools need to be reformed. We need to do a better job in the inner city with the schools because people aren't being educated enough to get good jobs. And it's condemning people from the inner city to futures that they just don't deserve because they're paying property taxes when they pay rent, however they do that, and they deserve better. Well, the response to that is you're a racist. Well, again, that statement has nothing to do with the underlying information.
Well, hey, in court, when you, and you're an attorney, in court, when they swear somebody in to tell the truth, they also add and nothing but the truth. And that's what you just were talking about. And they call those lies of influence. In other words, they're character lies. And they're meant to make you think that that the liar or the liar seems such a great person that they can't even be suspected of lying. Or they use the same inference, too, in gaslighting to say, well, you couldn't possibly, you're an intelligent person, you couldn't possibly believe this. But, Chris, we've got to get a little past this stuff that's going on now. We're being lied to in so many different ways about everything that the media pushes that we really can't use any of that information as a truth, and it's so difficult to, it's like picking grit out of chicken shit, you know?
It's a tough challenge, Fred. It is.
Right. You know there's some grit in that, but it's a messy job to go through it and find it. You know, that's what it is.
It is. But the point is, you don't throw up your hands and say, it can't be done. Or you can't throw up your hands. And here's why you can't. Because you can't give up on the truth. I think there is objective truth. I think there is objective reality. You know, I really think there is. Now, I think that the interpretations or the feelings about objective reality may differ wildly. But I think that we can come to certain conclusions, like the Earth is round. You know, that the atmosphere contains almost 80% nitrogen. I mean, we can come to these conclusions because there are scientific observations that can be verified. And this is where we wind up as a civilization. And the idea is we can get to a higher order of truth if we research that sufficiently. Now, it may not be because science has been fooled and come to incorrect conclusions, it may not ultimately be the reality, but it's the closest we can get today, you know, that the Earth is round, you know, and it's three-dimensional.
Hey, Chris, one of the chatters on the RBN, I mean the Revolution chat, is saying that you're making too much logical sense and that you're triggering his emotions.
that's exactly right. When you do that, that is the developmentally arrested response. It is. You say something and someone tells you how they feel. Well, I don't like that. You know, I think you're attacking, you know, like if someone says, well, there's two genders. Well, some guy who's got a beard and wearing a dress goes postal, you know.
Uh-oh. Hey, Chris, we got music. We got music. I missed that coming up. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Captain Fred.
Secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
downloaded to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
You going back in?
There's still men out there. God. When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. Freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back. This is Captain Fred. My guest today is Captain Chris, and we've been kind of discussing what it is that, what it is we've been discussing. Chris,
we were at the point of discussing opinion and belief, and when someone says, some guy in a dress says they're a woman, what does that mean? And the thing is, I'm not questioning the fervor or the sincerity of the belief. That guy, he may actually and really believe he's a woman. So,
He's an actor,
in the in his own. He's an actor and an object of the kind of abusive propaganda that this country has been exposed to here for quite a while now. And you know what? It's not even illegal.
No, they the thing, Fred, is he may be an actor in that construct, in that system, but that system is the position of emotionally arrested development on the part of progressives. And let me give you a real clear example here. This guy thinks he has a feeling, he feels, he believes that he's a woman. Well, okay. Believe you're a woman. I don't care. Where's that? I don't care. In fact, you can even have what I would consider necessary parts cut off. It doesn't change the fact that you're just some guy who doesn't have his necessary parts anymore. It doesn't make you a woman. It's just a belief. It's just where that is. And you can believe that all you want, but you don't have the right to tell me that I have to believe that. And let me give you how early in my personal development I came to the conclusion that just because I fervently believe something doesn't mean it's true. Now, when I was about five, I used to watch Superman on television. It shows you how old I am. But, you know, the idea is Superman had a cape, see, and he'd run really quickly, and he'd jump up into the air, and he was flying. So one day, I get a towel, see, and I wrap it around my shoulders because I know, I firmly, firmly believe that I can fly, just like Superman. I watched it. It's like, you know, it's sort of like Galaxy Quest. You know, I watched it on TV. It must be true. You know, so I put this towel around my shoulders, and I get to a place that's just too high, and boy, I just jump, and I know, I believe I'm going to fly. Well, we all know how that turned out. So at the age of five, I finally figured out that no matter how fervently you believe something, doesn't necessarily make it true. You can believe it in things other than, you know, a religious faith. What happens is, you know, the laws of physics and a serious inquiry into the surrounding facts will tell you straight away a towel and a belief in Superman is not sufficient enough to make you able to fly. It's just that simple. So if I don't question people who are of the belief that they're a woman because they wear a dress or they're a guy because they dress like a guy, I don't question their belief. And I think it's okay. Believe what you want. But don't tell me I have to believe.
Well, but that's just it. This conversation is being distracted by that particular narrative is what it is. And somewhere in the Bible, it says when the enemy sends distractions, they never look like distractions until they're finished distracting you.
I heard that. You know, and the thing in all of this is that when you say this is a distraction, I agree that as a political value, it ultimately is a distraction. Because the thing is, we really ought not to care. And I would say this, and here's an adult perspective, and it sounds kind of ugly in a certain way. And it really ought to go like this. I really don't care how you feel. It's not that as a social gesture or as a matter of courtesy, I think I should, but as a political matter, your feelings aren't important. Your behaviors are important. What you assume as a civic duty is important. Your commitment to the civil rights of other people, myself included, is important. But how you feel generally really doesn't make that big a difference. In other words, you can feel that you're a woman. I don't care. I really don't care that you think you're a woman. You go ahead if you want. I'm not going to feel that way. I don't think you're a woman. But it doesn't matter. Here's the question. Wearing a dress with a beard, are you committed in our form of government to protecting my constitutional rights, because I'm committed to protecting yours. And that's what makes this bus go. So it isn't really so much whether you think I'm a racist or whether you think that I'm an anarcho-syndicalist or whether you think that I'm a monarchist. It really doesn't make any difference what you feel. The question is, what are you doing and what am I doing? And can we get a commitment from each other, even though we have different beliefs and different feelings? Can we get a commitment from each other to respect each other's constitutional rights and to defend them to the death? That's what we should be focusing on, not how we feel.
But well, they're using the extremes of behavior to distract people, and that's the argument. And you and I both feel the same way about it. I really don't care if somebody wants to wear a dress or mutilate their body. It's theirs to do what they want. But I resist the idea that they can influence my life by the kind of behavior that they involve themselves in. I think that the distraction will continue until it quits distracting. You know, it's propaganda 101. The propaganda will continue as long as it's working.
Yeah. Well, and it does, and it is a distraction, you know, and the distraction really involves as a dynamic how people feel. And the reason I say this is because when you understand that that is a distraction and the distraction is about people's feelings, you understand that it's a progressive positioning. You and I aren't progressives. So the thing is when we look at that, we say, well, I don't care if some guy wears a dress. It doesn't make a difference to me. I'm not going to wear one. But, hey, you know, you want to wear a dress, knock yourself out. I'm okay with that. It's not really on my radar screen as something that really has something to do with something. The next step, though, is progressive. It's progressive distraction and it's progressive political maneuvering. It's like a little kid. You know, like we were talking about a baby. A baby wants to get something to eat, the diapers are dirty, that kind of stuff. He's annoyed. There are only two or three things that drives the baby bus, and it's a fairly limited number. But if you think about it, a baby can't by itself do any of those things. A baby can't change its diapers. A baby can't go to the refrigerator and get a quart of milk. You know, a baby can't make adults stop making loud noises. Can't even talk. So what do infants do in order to get the things they need? And what they do is they make you feel a certain way. You know, at a certain level, what happens is when a baby cries, an interested, loving parent becomes concerned because the baby feels something that is making the baby cry. And we begin to inquire, why is this baby crying? That is an infantile behavior that's meant to trigger a response in the parents so that the parents, how the parent feels and perceives, will attend to the baby's needs. So what we're looking at with somebody in a dress is I'm supposed to feel so sorry or so something. I'm supposed to feel so guilty or so something that what I'm going to do is I'm going to go along with this. I'm going to give this guy in the dress exactly what the guy needs. Because I don't want to feel bad. Now, wait a minute. The guy wearing the dress doesn't trigger in me that kind of sympathy or that kind of response. I don't care. You know, I don't care how he feels. You want to wear a dress? Wear a dress. Don't wear a dress? Don't wear a dress. You know, you want to wear a mustache? Wear a mustache. You want to wear a beret? Wear a beret. You don't want to wear shoes? I don't care. You know, that's up to you. And I respect you being able to do that because I require that you respect my ability to express different opinions. In my opinion, I hope, is based on some sort of closer to science response other than I feel this way, and therefore you need to go along with it. I feel this way, you need to go along with it, is a progressive position. So when you see that in a pronouncement, or you see that in a policy, it ought to be the signal to you that the person that you're dealing with is a progressive, and having some sort of discourse about that is likely going to meet with distraction, arguments that you're a racist or a homophobe or you're this or you're a bad person. You're going to get these kind of progressive responses, because what you're not going to get generally is any kind of scientific basis for the nonsense that you're hearing. When someone says, I feel this way, and therefore you should change your behavior.
That's true. You know, Chris, you brought to mind something that I read years ago. It's called the Celestine Prophecies. Have you ever read that?
No, I've seen the movie The Mothman Prophecies, but I'm not sure.
Oh, well, the movie. Well, I don't know. But what the prophecies got into a lot of different kinds of behavior, or that what they called were control dramas. And these control dramas were part of the insights that the Celestine Prophecies really brought up. And I brought it up here a little bit. It says the sixth insight states that childhood dramas block our ability to fully experience the mystical. All humans, because of their upbringing, tend toward one of the four control dramas: intimidators steal energy from others by threat, and interrogators steal it by judging and questioning. Aloof people attract attention and energy to themselves by acting reservedly or withdrawing, and the poor me's make us feel guilty and responsible for them. And that's what the children do, the poor me's, the crying, they make us feel guilty and responsible for them. And that's kind of all of these dramas we experience by the way media gives us information. We are being, our behavior is being manipulated by these control dramas. You know, the intimidators, well, the war is intimidating. It's stealing energy from us by making us feel one way or the other. And that's another thing. You and I, Chris, have grown up our whole lives, and I'm in my 70s and so are you. We've spent our whole lives in a state of war. And how much of any of what we hear or what we're exposed to do you believe is real? And how much of it do you believe is generated to manipulate our feelings?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think that one would have to be like totally disconnected as a human being not to be emotionally affected by war. In other words, war is like the casting aside those type of behaviors that we normally view as civilized. I don't, without personal justification, kill another human being. At some point in all of this stuff here, and, you know, I'll go back to the Second World War. My father was a bombardier, and he was with the 8th Air Force. And Hermann Göring came to the conclusion after the Battle of Britain that rather than to try to reduce to rubble the English capacity to wage war by bombing things like airfields and manufacturing plants that developed aircraft and munitions, that what he was going to do was going to bomb civilian areas. And in response, the British said, okay, we're going to bomb civilian areas. And I know that my dad bombed, he participated in the Schweinfurt raid that was a ball bearing plant. He bombed the sub pens at Wilhelmshaven. But I know that he also participated in a number of raids on Berlin, which was one of the more heavily defended against air attack locations on the planet at the time. And I know that what happened in the bombing of Berlin, a lot of the bombs fell on civilian areas. Whether that was intended or not, I would have to say that in part it probably was. And so when we go to war, we suspend those things. And my father's grandfather was a member of the clergy. And I know that he had a very religious upbringing. And I've often wondered how personally he squared that. So the thing is that we are going to be emotionally triggered by certain events. And whether that's intentional that we're triggered that way, or it's just a consequence of things because that's just the nature of the beast, we are going to be triggered. And I agree with you that we have been, for one reason or another, in one place or another, almost continuously at war for the last, oh, geez, what, since the Second World War.
Well, you know, even before that.
You know, we had Korea and then Vietnam. And, you know, we had a number of kind of like asymmetrical situations. And you know.
Well, Chris, given our experience with wars, it's been my experience that none of these wars that you just mentioned have been for the benefit of anybody other than the people that are making money from them. I can't see
well,
that.
I could disagree at that point. I absolutely could disagree. And the reason is that there are certain political systems that seek to have dominance. That's part of their operating their book of operations. They want to expand their influence. They want to expand their territory. They want to expand their control. And the systems that are involved in that expansion are sometimes very antithetical. They're completely hostile to the democratic Republican principles that should support what we do here as a nation. And in that sense, I think wars are justified or are fought to resist that. And I think that's entirely appropriate. Now, where that shows up on the motive meter, you know, as a 95 versus a 98 for weapons manufacturers, I don't know. But I can tell you I know why my dad bombed Germany. And it didn't have anything to do with the fact that General Motors was making Jeeps.
When I was a younger man, I was learning to fly, and all of the people that were hanging around the airport were all retired World War II pilots, and that's who I learned to fly with. One of my close instructor friends was a B-17 pilot, and the other instructor friend was a Luftwaffe pilot. And, you know, the arguments that they had, they never really got into what it was they did. But there was a lot of overlying ideas that they had. Both felt like they were fighting for a just cause. And I think that that's probably part of the propaganda. They try to create a just cause that we can believe in. The just cause in Vietnam was the stopping of communism. And now it's like I got a toolbox the other day that was from China, but it was manufactured in Cambodia. Now, we didn't do too much good with the stopping of communism in Vietnam, but there, I know that Bell Helicopter made a lot of money. I know that Roundup evolved out of Agent Orange and has hidden themselves in the German company Bayer now because they don't want to pay out all the damage they've done because of it. But all of these companies that have been involved in these wars, just as the companies that were involved in COVID, are filthy rich now. And now we have another war that's basically back to oil. And like I said, you can say what you've been told about oil and production of oil, but when I drive through the oil fields, they're busy pumping oil. All right? I mean, I saw that.
It's not secondhand information. It's firsthand information. We're busy producing oil. The people that were producing it with pipelines were shut down, but the wildcatters out in West Texas are still busy pumping oil. So I don't know what to believe about it. I think they're just gouging us, making massive profits.
Well, you know, I think that business people are going to, given the opportunity, make more money. So there's no argument there. But the reality that I see is this, is that I believe, you know, if you know the history of Texas, there's very little federal or public land in Texas because of the way that the state and then the republic was quite essentially settled. And that is that the settlement of Texas was not where the federal government, as in New Mexico, acquired vast tracts of land. It turns out that the history of Texas is land grants from the Spanish. So what this means and translates into public day energy policy is that you have in Texas a lot of land that's really not as subject to federal control over drilling and, mineral extraction as there is in other states. So if you go
all land in Texas is privately owned, except for the land that was set aside for schools.
Yeah, and there are some federal areas and state parks and that sort of thing. But what I mean to say is, when the federal government says that they're going to restrict or they're going to impede, they don't say we'll prohibit it. But if they restrict or they impede drilling in areas where there is a higher chance of energy production for new production, then what that does is that has an effect on the amount of energy produced.
Hey, hold these thoughts a second. We've got to take a break here. This is Captain Fred with Captain Chris. We're on the fifth dimension on Revolution Radio. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
This is Captain Fred, and you're listening to The Fifth Dimension today on revolution.radio, freedomslips.com. And I'd like to put in a plug for the station real quick before we forget about it. If you're enjoying this alternative media and you want to keep it up, then you're going to have to send something in to us. You can send us a goat or a dog or cash or credit, or however you'd like to do it. Go to the freedomslips.com website and look under donations, and they'll show you different ways. You can always send in a check or cash to the station or the frequency, and everybody seems to to work together at this network to bring this kind of conversation to us. You know, Chris, years ago when we used to sit on the dock and we would argue, and you know, I've missed those times, and it's telling, because I think I had fun having some of these arguments with you today. As long as we respected each other and could listen to each other, there's something that's always came out of it that was useful somehow. But Chris,
well, here's something useful. See, you would have arguments, I would have discussions.
All right, I used the wrong word.
I'm just bleeping with you, Fred. Just like the old days. I'm just pulling your leg.
There was a lot of vodka or rum involved. Yeah. I can't remember.
On occasion, one or the other, you know.
Both.
You know, but the thing is, it's that type of discourse, you know, that I think that we're obligated to have, not only, you know, over an adult beverage, but, you know, when we are in an environment where someone is tossing out one of these progressive canards, you know, one of these, things you're supposed to go along with, you know, and I have to put a footnote in here. You know, my wife, she just doesn't like to hear that when I will interject something in response to something that I think is just is fallacious, or just stupid, or just factually incorrect. She thinks that is impolite, and I have to kind of agree with her in the sense that it does have aspects which are not universally believed to be socially useful. Some people say, well, you should never discuss politics or religion, you know, on the other hand, it turns out in our culture, the exchange of information about things political, I don't think is an option because of the reasons that you pointed out. Our sources of information are so skewed that we have an obligation to pursue the most accurate information and then to express it. And in a way, when you talk about sitting on a dock and having an argument, the purpose of having a discussion, even a heated discussion, is to test the information upon which you base your opinion, which is different from a feeling. You know, if my opinion is based on faulty information, I need to research that information, and I may even need to change my opinion. But to say that I'm not going to involve myself in that discussion because there's some sort of discourteous component to that, to me is abandoning an obligation that we have to each other, and that is to hold each other to sound reasoning and to accurate factual underpinnings. We have that obligation. We can't let people walk, or not a place where adults vote with the idea that, you know, Father, you know, that Joe Biden's Father Christmas. You know, wait a minute. No. Let's talk about that. You know, well, if that offends people, I'm sorry. You know,
Chris, you and I look at information differently because of the kind of lives that we've lived. You are a lawyer, and you know, I used to do marketing, so we both are pretty familiar with disinformation and lying, and so we have to look at it differently because we've dealt in that kind of information before. I mean, and I say lies, maybe not lies, but information that enhances a position would be called propaganda, I guess. But, you know, we've learned to deal with these things differently because most people don't really realize that what a half-truth is, or the lie of inference, or, you know, different ways of deceiving people are being used in the media constantly, whether it be in advertising or whether it be in the information. The information that is purported to be news on the mainstream media is sponsored by the people that benefit from it the most. So you can't really depend on news and information on the media, because that's all entertainment more than anything else. And that's, I think, the biggest problem that we have right now. People don't know how to tell the difference between entertainment and reality.
Well, you know, I'm looking at these words, entertainment and reality, and, you know, I don't want to get, you know, too philosophical about this, but, you know, I have sometimes a difficulty figuring out what, quote, reality is. I don't have a complete familiarity with astrophysics and stuff like that to be able to come to that conclusion as to what this is. But I do have to operate within the theater where I find myself. So when you talk about reality or what the people in the media are doing, yeah, I completely agree with you in the sense you have to sort what you understand to be accurate information and what information is not accurate. And there are gradations in this. And it's not only a gradation because somebody is trying to sell you something. It may be because the person who is giving you the information has a worldview that's radically different from yours. And I think that I was reading something the other day that it turns out that there's a lawsuit underway now. It's in the Supreme Court, and it has to do with the admissions policy at Harvard University. And what's happened at Harvard University is that Harvard is maintaining a position that they, because they want a diverse student body, what they're going to do is they're going to let people in for reasons other than academic performance, you see. Because in the stated position is that they're doing this because they want diverse views, because they figure that, you know, if you go to a university and you have somebody who's, let's say, a Shia Muslim, and he's talking to somebody who's a Baptist, and there's somebody who's a Jew, and there's somebody who's a Buddhist, and they're sitting down at a table in the student union, and they're having a discussion about, you know, what's good or what's bad about other people's really, you know, it expands their worldview. Okay, so that's their position, you see. And in pursuing this position, what they had done is they've discriminated on the basis of race against Asians who have higher academic scores. And why am I getting to this? Because what happens is Harvard used to put out a statistical presentation on a yearly basis of the, whether people who were in the who went to Harvard were self-identified as conservatives, or self-identified as liberal or progressives. And this year, while this lawsuit's before the Supreme Court, they didn't do it. They didn't do it. But if you go back and look at the publication from Harvard about what the views are, overwhelmingly, like 95, 96% of the student body self-identifies as liberal or progressive. So how is Harvard attending to different views if 95 or 96% of the student population has the same views? Well, what Harvard does is there are two things that are relevant to what you were just talking about, Fred. Harvard now doesn't tell you that. So they conceal that information, you see. But the second thing is the people who come out of Harvard are in a philosophical or political lockstep. They all have the same view of political reality because that's all they got to deal with. They didn't have someone who said to them, wait a minute, this transgender stuff is total nonsense. There's only two biological gender. You do that at Harvard, you're going to lose your job. You know, so the thing is, when people come out of that and they go into, like I also read, that an impromptu survey was done of the students who were at the Columbia School of Journalism, another Ivy League school. Everybody in the class was a progressive liberal, a Democrat. There was nobody in this school of journalism, in this one particular class, who self-identified care to self-identify as a conservative. Well, what do you think happens when these people wind up in positions of either political authority or they wind up in a position of broadcast journalism? Well, they all share the same, quote, reality. Their reality is not my reality. And it's not your reality, Fred, but it certainly is there. And if they turn around in the newsroom or they turn around in the political context where they find themselves, everybody that they talk to agrees with them. So that's how they describe what it is that they consider to be news. They do it from that relative position. And it's just really, really different from how we see stuff. Now, that's just the, what I call the spin. But there's other stuff that's consciously done. And I think the clearest examples are Hunter Biden's laptop. That story was just not made available to the public intentionally. Now, why is that? And that has to do with, and you have to take a look at this, is that because somebody believed, and even if they did, they believed that the information contained on the laptop was questionable? What is the function of the press? Is it to prejudge information and then decide not to publish it? In some senses, yes, if it's like obviously false and just obviously a lie. But that's not the case with that laptop. Never was. Somebody made the decision that that information was not going to go forward. And then you find out that people from the government talk to people in the journalism sphere and into big tech, into personal, personal media, social media, and told them to watch out for Russian disinformation. It's coming along, about the time of this laptop.
Chris, do you believe in journalism now?
Do I believe in it? I believe that
is there journalism? Is there journalism in media now?
I don't think that the type of journalism that we experienced when we were growing up is active today. And journalism, when Richard Nixon was the president, and you had Woodward and Bernstein and people running around and diving into information and facts and stuff like that, that to me was journalism. I will agree that it was kind of like a Democrat or progressive journalism at the time, and I can say, but still, it was anti, in a sense, establishment government journalism. Today, you don't get that. You don't get, unless it's Donald Trump, you don't get aggressive anti-government journalism. And the
right.
whole point of journalism, I thought, was to be the safeguard against government. We were supposed to get information that allowed us to make decisions, informed decisions, about what the government was up to. And if we don't have that information, it becomes very difficult for people to make rational decisions. For example, on that laptop story, poll after poll has reflected that if voters knew what was on that laptop before the last election, Joe Biden never would have been president. But that was purposely suppressed. And it was suppressed not only from the news agencies, it was suppressed on social media, and the government got involved, and ex-government people got involved to tell you it was Russian disinformation. It was like the Trump and the Russia hoax. When you get down into it, that was all nonsense.
Let's put that in. That's past lies. Those are the lies of commission that were created, just like the lies of COVID. And one of the chatters just posted.
Absolutely.
One of the lies. There was a note that was posted that the CDC will vote Thursday to permanently shield Pfizer and Moderna from COVID vaccine injury liability. I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure CDC can do that. But the thing is, I see that coming. But let me tell you a little reality about
Now, wait. I wanted to make my point real quick on that. That was a lie that was a distraction that was coming at us a couple of years ago, and now the current distraction is the Ukraine war. If this is, and that's what this show is about, is how the distractions keep us from actually the coming together on discussions which we really need to be discussing. What is this war a distraction for, do you think?
Well, let me go back to the CDC and then let's talk about the war. I'm not sure that the CDC could do that, but I think that the government can. So I don't know what branch of the government would do that, but I think that ultimately at some point, I think that's going to happen. And I find that outrageous. And in Texas, do you know that if you try to sue a pharmaceutical company because on a products liability basis, you can't. Unless you're never going to win unless you can show that the pharmaceutical manufacturer falsified information as the pharmaceutical went through the FDA process. So let's start there. That, I can see that coming with respect to Pfizer and other Moderna and all the other COVID stuff. Yeah, I can see that coming.
Most people believe the CDC, first of all, most people believe the CDC is a government agency, which it's not. It's a private health corporation that makes most of its money licensing flu vaccines. And the FDA makes all of its money from the money that the drug companies give them for approving their drugs. Both of those organizations are compromised, and yet they've been in the forefront of information from in the media. And it's going to be the same thing with this war in Kosovo. Shit, that's another war. It's war in Ukraine.
Well, you know, my concern is not that there's a war in Ukraine. Let me back up. I think that the CDC and the FDA do a lot of positive things. The stuff with the vaccine and vaccinating you know, six-year-old kids without any rational study, to me, is a whole different kettle of fish. But let's get over to the Ukraine. The problem with the Ukraine is this, in my opinion. Taxpayer money is being given in connection with whatever their experience is. A lot of taxpayer money. The problem I have with that is, where's this money going? Now, some people say
there's no accountability. There's no accountability.
You know, the last time I looked, one of the Biden family was on a board of some energy company over there. There were issues, as I understand, from the State Department involved in a coup. You know, what I see over there is a society that's kind of like the Wild West. That's how it bounces off me. When I look at the Ukraine, I don't see social order and accountability that we come to expect in other Western countries like Denmark or Germany or, you know, even Spain or, France. We don't get that level of accountability. There seems to be a lot of kind of loosey-goosey things going on over there in terms of the conduct of the political process, elections, who's in charge, how that happens, and all that. But more to the point, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of accountability when somebody starts dumping billions with a B. And I want you to remember something. When the Trump administration tried to get $5 billion to kick off the border wall, it was too expensive. You couldn't get that out of Congress. $5 billion. Go take a look at the numbers that they're pumping into the Ukraine to God only knows what and why. In other words, I don't like Russian aggression. The Russians signed agreements, I think, in Budapest when the Soviet Union was taken down. And the Russians agreed to the territorial integrity of the Ukraine. So if the Russians disregard that and invade a neighbor, I've got a problem with that. I've got a problem with that because there ought to be some sort of enforcement of international agreements. And the the rule of international law, if there is such a thing. On the other hand, dumping billions of dollars into a government that's particularly noted for a couple of things. I think one of our callers on one of the shows we had said that the Ukraine is like one of the number one money laundering spots on the planet. I don't know if that's true, but I'd say I don't have a whole lot of information, because I don't know whether it's true, to tell you that it isn't. Because I don't know how that government is run. Well, seriously, that's, our opinion should be based on facts. What facts do I have to tell me that it's a cohesive rule of law kind of place?
We don't have any facts about it. All we see is what inflames people. You know, we don't have any information about it. What I was laughing at is one of the chatters said that it's a rules-free fire zone, and for everything money laundering, bio labs, human trafficking is, he called it the Cantina Bar from Star Wars.
Well, there you have it, and we don't have any information that it's not that way. And the thing is we're pumping all of this money into that place, and as much as I dislike the former Soviet Union and how they treat people within their own society, I used to be involved with a number of refugees from Bulgaria and in Georgia and the Soviet Union, former Soviet, and they tell me that the Soviets and the Russian government today is very repressive. I agree with that. But what's going on over there? I don't know.
Who knows, Chris? But this, for another discussion, this is coming to the close of the Fifth Dimension today, October the 18th of 2022. Captain Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and your views. Always welcome here. We'll be back next week. Y'all,
well, thank
take care.
You for having me. Catch you later.
We'll see you, Chris.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
The This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take.
But as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence